Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm from, I grew up in West Baltimore. Went to Digital Harbor High School, and I went to college at Towson University. You know, I think debate's probably the main thing I've done most of my life. Like, I've done that since ninth grade in high school, and I kind of stuck with it for the past several years. And it's one of the hallmarks of my personality. Like, I like to talk a lot. You know, I like to do research. I like to do public speaking. And so it's one of those things where that debate stuck with me for a long time. But generally, you know, I'm a pretty regular person. You know, I like to do regular things that 20-somethings do. But the thrust of what I find myself doing nowadays is doing debate-related stuff. Like, going to a debate tournament's fun. You know, all those things are really cool for me. So that's kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah, you're pretty good at arguing, too. I know that for a fact. What did debate do for you as a kid going to high school?
So when I was in high school, one thing that I remember feeling a lot was not having a forum to kind of put my thoughts together and express them in a real concise and effective way. And so doing it in high school, while a student in high school, I came across the Baltimore Urban Debate League. And I was like, you know, this is a good place for me to kind of meet smart people, interact with smart folks. And so I did a bunch of stuff in the debate league at the time. But what I realized is that, you know, doing debate in high school really helped me be a better, like, researcher. Like, I got all of my schoolwork got better. You know, all of my public speaking skills got better because it forced me to come out of my shell because I did it a lot in high school. And so doing it in college also helped me, too, because now, like, doing a 15-20-page research paper when I was a senior in college was like, that's like nothing because that's as much research as I do anyway for debate. And so all these, like, regular skills that already kind of came naturally to me, debate really helped, like, formulate and thrust those things into, like, the forefront of my thought process.
So debate is as much about preparation as it is public speaking.
Oh, most definitely. One of the mistakes that people make about debate, people think debate is all about prose and sounding good oratorically. And with policy debate, the reason why we in LBS, for example, the reason why we focus on policy debate, it's the most rigorous form of debate you can do. You know, policy debate, you know, if you do the same amount of research that a high school student does in 1 year for policy debate, same amount that a master's student does in a thesis in 1 year. And so I found myself just running into, like, doing tons and tons of research on, like, you know, large scale policy issues. And I was doing it like it was nothing because I was just so interested in the topic areas. And so it's partially about being persuasive, but you also have to know what you're talking about. So you have to know how to do research and you have to know how to write well.
So give us a good example of a couple of the topics that about which your campers, if they will, debated.
Well, this year is a perfect example. So this year we're talking about ocean exploration. That's what the high school debate topic is about. And so, you know, people, when they think about ocean exploration, it's like, well, what are we talking about? We're talking about, like, you know, coral reefs, or like, what exactly is the interest for students? And most of our students, you know, they're not naturally interested in the ocean. And so one of the connections that some of our instructors made this summer, they were talking about the slave trade and how the ocean was an active component of the Middle Passage, and how, you know, for example, with African people had to jump over the board of the slave ships, and their bones are scattered across the Atlantic Ocean, and talking about how that influences our economy today and how that translates into other forms of trade that we do in the current American economy. And so students were like blown away. They were like, yeah, I'm black and I never thought about how my people's ancestry was connected to the economic system of America today, like talking about capitalism, things like that. And so they use that lens of analysis to approach other public policy issues. And so that's an innovative thing that most camps aren't talking about. And so ECLI is setting the standard for other folks around the country in terms of talking about these issues from a social justice standpoint.
Give us a couple of more examples of topics about which you debate.
Sure. Well, there's a couple of things. So actually, when I was a debater, people still use this argument. It's called the African-American research paradigm. It was actually the argument itself was crafted by a psychologist, Dr. Naeem Akbar. And so he was talking specifically about the way we approach research. And so his criticism of the current mainstream paradigms of research is that we approach it in an objective and disconnected way. We don't see ourselves, when you're in, like, you know, graduate school, you're supposed to see yourself as disconnected from the research. You have to do it from an objective component, from an objective standpoint. And his criticism was, when you do that, you fail to see the ways in which that you are connected to the research and where your biases affect your research, and you do ineffective, terrible research. So he had a four-tier methodology on how to approach research. And he was like, you know, this is inherently part of the African-American tradition because the way that we do research is we see ourselves as inherently connected to the things we do research about. We should see ourselves as connected to the people we're talking about. And that inherently produces better results, better conclusions, better ideas about what's going on. And using that as kind of a starting point for debate is good because when people do research and debate, typically they don't see themselves as connected to the arguments. They're just doing research about large scale issues without really thinking about the ways that they are involved with it. So there's that, and there's also another argument called NOMO, which is about basically African American vernacular. Some people call it Ebonics, but that was the terminology we use for. Our other arguments. It basically was talking about how in debate, you know, debate's a very insular world. So you have like high tech jargon that we use in debate. And so if you were in a real, like, chances are if you were just watching, you know, a regular college round or even a high school round, most people can't follow because there's all this technical jargon being thrown around. And so the criticism in that argumentation was being able to use different communicative styles that, you know, an example being Ebonics, African-American vernacular in debate, because that's a way that we communicate amongst each other. And so we should be using our own communicative styles in debate, you know, in different contexts so that way we can connect to the argumentation. And so, you know, it's all these criticisms of, you know, mainstream society, mainstream structures of domination. Like, how do we challenge those structures and how do we make students better advocates? That's kind of the approach that all of these arguments take. And they just use different methodologies to do that.
Tell us a little bit about the attendees at the debate camp.
Sure. So it's funny because in the initial thinking about creating the camp, we didn't really know what types of students we would draw. We figured we would get some students, a lot of students from Baltimore who cared about these issues because, you know, we're based in Baltimore. But we actually got a really, really diverse crowd of students who didn't, initially even coming, they didn't even know if they were going to all the way like the camp. And so just to give some examples, there were three young ladies from Minnesota, from St. Paul, Minnesota. And they were, you know, all of them were kind of just like, they were black women in the debate circuit in Minnesota. We weren't really close to any of the black folks there because it's already a small population of black people in debate. They were all high school students. And so they came across the camp and met some of our colleagues in the college debate. And so they came to Baltimore, and they were like, this is the first time I've ever been at an HBCU surrounded by black people in debate talking about issues that relate to me. This is fantastic. And so a lot of them, I mean, all three of them have gone off to college, doing fantastic community work up in Minnesota. And this year, we actually had several white students who came to our camp who at first in coming were really like reticent. They didn't know, like, well, this is a camp about social justice and, you know, there's lots of people of color here. So I don't want to overstep my boundaries. I don't know how to have these conversations. And if you listen to if I read their testimony after the camp, like, what did they think? And they were saying all types of stuff. They were like, you know, I didn't even know what white supremacy or racism or any of that stuff was really until I actually got to sit down, talk to other black people about it and be challenged on my own privilege. And I got to see the ways that it manifested in the world. Like, I never saw that before. And so it really gave, like, and the thing is, they had that at 16 years old. Like, there's folks who are like 30, 40, 50 that can't have those conversations, honestly. And so those students, you know, they were actually some of the best students at the camp because they were willing to put themselves in a position to learn and to grow from it.
And to debate on both sides of the issue.
Oh, most definitely. Because that's the best part about debate. You get to see both sides and actually have the conversation and not get caught up in what I feel. Like, you know, you know, people do that, generally speaking. And, you know, you have those moments. But these are the types of kids where they came for that. That's what they came. They came to the camp to be challenged, to be put in a position where they could learn. And I think if you ask them now, it's probably one of the better experiences that they've had, right, you know, in their lives.
It's so critical as we solve the difficult problems of race and poverty today that we have a next generation that's trained to analyze things mm-hmm. and to argue things from both sides of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we ought to have some senators and some congressmen come up to your debate camp. They'd probably do learn something.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. That's the goal. We're trying to make them into congressmen and senators and public policymakers. So
I think that's probably going to happen. What are the schools around the country that have the best social policy debate teams?
It's funny you mentioned that. So historically speaking, if we're talking just in historical context, one of the universities that was at the forefront of this this kind of move in debate was the University of Louisville. Dr. Eddie Warner, Daryl Birch, Elizabeth Jones, Tanya Green, and a bunch of other folks at the University of Louisville who kind of were on the forefront of these types of argumentation. The program itself has diminished in more recent years, but lately, because of all the success that's been happening around the country, all these schools have kind of cropped up, like the University of Oklahoma, Emporia State University, Cal State Fresno, and Fullerton, like all these other like large universities that have. They have teams or they have people on the team like the coaching staff and the directors who are all kind of centered on these types of issues. And so it's almost too many to name. I mean, it's like at least like two dozen of them.
That's great. So the Morgan team will go around and compete with those schools?
Oh, most definitely, especially in Maryland, because Maryland only has one policy debate team, and that's in Towson. And Towson's actually one of the students at Towson, they won like nationals this year. And so they're kind of on the same side of the coin in terms of the arguments that I was just talking about. But Morgan will be traveling and competing against like the likes of Harvard, Michigan, Wake Forest, you know, these big schools that have huge budgets, you know. And because Baltimore we have the best talent. I'm a firm believer that we run debate around the country because we have the best talent in the country. You know, we have people here that are champions. We have people come to Baltimore and teach our students. You know, I feel like if we're competing against other cities in terms of debate talent, if it was a debate tournament based on cities, I think Baltimore wins every time.
That's exciting. Yeah, Baltimore has got no shortage of really smart people talking about social justice issues. It's wonderful that you're creating a debate team around it that takes it to an entirely different level.
Yeah, that's the focus. Because I think probably the problem that has been happening in the country, which we're trying to fix, like people approach debate like a social service thing. Like it's one of those things where people see debate as a gift you're giving people. Whereas our model is people are already generally intelligent and they're generally smart. What they need is a framework and a structure to amplify the gifts that they already have. And so because we're using that framework, we already have all these gifted and talented people who want to do debate. And so now it's like, how do we, in our organization, because we're the only organization of our kind in the country in terms of being debaters. Like, there's no debaters that I know of that are, you know, in my head, that have taken their debate advocacy skills, like, did and made this type of organization, and then are actively trying to reach back and recruit young people. And so this is, to me, it's an innovation that we're trying to expound upon. We want other people to follow the role.
What's it take to train a good debater?
Well, it's a good question. Well, generally speaking, you just need someone who has I'll start from here. So generally speaking, debaters are not naturally gifted. Like most of us aren't naturally smart, aren't naturally gifted in the sense that when we get up, you know, we just automatically are great debaters. All of us, we need some pushing. We need to be trained. And so with the part, that's where you start. We don't start with, you know, people that are already just going to be fantastic speakers out the gate. You can already see the gifts, you can already see the pieces, but you need to be able to see the parts that people are lacking or see the parts that are already sticking out and just, you know, grab it out of people. When I see students, I see stuff that just needs to be grabbed and brought to the forefront. And so that's probably where you start. You just start with the, you know, the basic skills, reading, writing, research, rhetoric, you know, what are the parts that they need to be developed? And then you just figure out a way to get them to the bubble to the top. You take them to some practice debates, you get them involved immediately. And then as they develop, they'll get more confident and they'll want to do the work. Because I've come across so many people, like in college debate, that starting out, I remember watching them when they were freshmen in high school. And, you know, they weren't naturally gifted from the outside. You didn't see them like, you know, being naturally good debaters. But you saw them put in the work. And that's the type, and you need a person who's just tenacious enough and competitive enough to want to put in the work. Then anybody can be a fantastic debater.
Yeah, it's a competitive sport. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's the NCAA of academics, as far as I'm concerned.
So we're going to have a number one ranked social debate team at Morgan. That's pretty exciting.
Oh yeah. It's only right because and other HBCUs need to follow suit because other historically black colleges have been historically left out of the conversation, and it's for a good reason because big schools have more money and they can travel that amount of students, but you know at Morgan State. Because it's in Baltimore, it's one of those things where because we have all the talent, we have all the people, that's usually what you're lacking. You don't have the people. When you have the people, all we have to do is find the resources, and Morgan can automatically ascend to the top of the ranks.
Great. What's the website of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle? How do people follow you?
They can just go to our website at www.lbsbaltimore.com, or they can follow us on any social media, at LBS Baltimore.